In the Movie Podcast. Welcome to In the Move for Podcast with Callum Reid of AutomatAddict.com and Pete Shepherd of InTheMoveForBlog.blog.co.uk. It's episode 25.
If we were playing a game of cricket down the local club, we'd be forced to retire now. Because that's what you have to do when you get 25 runs. Obscure reference there.
Okay. I thought you meant you couldn't play if you're over 25 years old.
No, you get 25 runs and then you have to give up because you're obviously too good for the shoddy bowlers who are chucking up pies.
Oh, that's a cop-out.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't happen to me that often.
I cannot pretend to be interested in cricket, I'm afraid.
So we're not going to be talking about the disaster of the first test, then?
I thought they were fighting back. Did that just
I don't know. I only saw the bad bits and stopped paying attention.
You only saw the bad bits?
Well, it's like the football at the weekend as well. It was just bad bits. Didn't pay attention.
No good bits from my end.
Well, yeah. It was a decent match, actually. We were joking beforehand. I saw my brother at the pub. We were joking, saying it was El Sporting Clásico.
Oh, yeah. I was anticipating a dreadful day game.
He made 16 quid off a 20p bet because he had you lot to win at 3-1. It was 80-1. And he put 20p on it and made 16 quid.
I'm just amazed we scored 3, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I needed 10 men to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sent Cal a lovely text saying that you says it all when you've won 3-1 and your keeper's man of the match.
I didn't get the text. My phone has been working for weeks.
Really? Yeah. Really? Yeah.
But thanks.
It was playful.
Probably more playful than the game.
Yeah, right. Okay. So.
So there hasn't been much news this week. So, do you just want to get into the our opening gambit?
Segment. Yeah, which isn't gambit. That's going to have to be next week. this week we're going to be talking about the round table that's happened with the Best Actress hopefuls. Is it Hollywood Reporter that does these?
Yes, they do. Right. I think it's been maybe 5 years now. Mm. 4 or 5 years they've done it.
Mm. Yeah, of some description, yeah. It came up online today and we thought, oh, we may as well have a look and talk about it. Because it goes on for like an hour. And this year they had, was it 7 people? Yeah.
Yeah, which seemed a lot, but everybody seemed to be focused quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
It was the same guy doing it and he asked some of the same questions. He's asked some of the same people who've been on these same things before. It's like, get a new set.
Yeah, he can be a little bit repetitive. I think he's just trying to facilitate the conversation between them, really.
Mm. Mm.
Which he did. But the actresses yeah. were... and
yes.
Naomi Watts, who's... These are all presumed to be awards contenders. Naomi Watts is in The Impossible later this year.
Mm-hmm. And I've only heard good things.
Yes. Anne Hathaway mm-hmm. is in Les Miserables. Amy Adams is in The Master, which we'll talk about later.
What, you mean she wasn't there because of trouble with the curve?
God. I'm assuming not, but that joy is to come soon as well.
She's going to Eastwood her way in.
Marion Cotillard is there because of Rust and Bone, which we talked about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sally Field is there because she's in Lincoln, playing Daniel Day-Lewis' wife.
And because she's Sally Field.
Yeah. Does she really need an excuse to be there? And there was Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt. Struggled on that one.
I know.
And Helen Hunt, who's in The Sessions. And Rachel Weisz, I've no idea why she was there, because, let's be fair, the Deep Blue Sea isn't doing a thing this year.
I don't know if they've even sent screeners either. So
it's just baffling.
It came out in what, April there?
I've no idea.
Very early.
Yeah.
So, but
it was this year here as well. Most places.
Was it?
Well, I saw it here earlier this year, and it was 2012 when I saw it. Got round to it.
Right. Well, I thought it was quite good.
It was entertaining.
Yeah, it's always good, kind of hearing actresses kind of compliment each other, and because you never really hear that really, because when it's a straight one to one interview with a journalist, they're not going to be as open really or free.
No, I actually found it really interesting. This is the first time in all of these. You had two different people. One was Amy, and one was saying how she'd like to do stuff for produce stuff for other people. And then you had Anne Hathaway. Oh, she was saying she'd been trying to write a script for Celia Weston. And Hathaway said she'd been trying to write a script for Sally Field. Is this the only thing they can do in their off time? Just write fantasy scripts. They're like film geeks. They are internet film geeks.
I'd really like to see that Hathaway script.
The spy film for Sally Field.
As long as it's not like Get Smart.
But I didn't mind that, actually. That was it got better. It didn't. The first half hour is awful, but it picks up.
Yeah.
But should we just go through each one, what they brought to the party?
Yeah. Can we start with Naomi Watts?
Always. The very British Naomi Watts.
And why is this?
Because she's British.
But is she?
Yes, she. Her dad was a sound engineer or something for Pink Floyd back in the 70s. But really, she is British, and she's on record saying she's more than happy for the British to claim her back.
Somehow I thought that I'd heard her in an Australian accent, though.
Yes, she does. This is the first time I've really noticed her sounding English, let's put it that way.
I'm wondering if it's because she's just done that Diana film.
Possibly, and she's still in it.
Yeah.
Well, the other side of it is, I mean, I always thought that she did a decent fist of an English accent in The Painted Veil. Less so in the Woody Allen You'll Meet a Tall Dark Stranger. But she just sounds exactly like she did in The Painted Veil, basically.
Yeah.
So I don't think she was doing much of an accent on that one. Yeah, what did you think about what she had to say?
The
comedy thing, I can understand, because she does have quite a lot of joyless parts.
Yeah.
I did find it quite, I wouldn't go as far as saying moving, but I thought it would be quite nice to hear her talking about the 10 years of struggle that she, and all auditions, and just being completely resigned to your fate.
But then that's before Mulholland Drive, so that's over 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So it is nice to put it into perspective that not all of these stars, like Anne Hathaway, get a massive break when they're really young because of their looks, and then just ride it mercilessly.
Yeah.
Pornographically. But yeah, and it was really cute when Amy said that she'd cut out a article of hers.
About Naomi Watts.
Yeah. The sisterhood.
Yeah, Amy was quite feisty.
Yeah, she's really,
because she was quite mousy before, but now
She didn't have to hide behind roles that Swank wanted that she'd turned down. She didn't have to cower in the corner for incurring the wrath of the Swank.
Yeah, I kind of wish because Adam's pipe pipes up about pictures the media have took of a kid or whatever.
Mm.
But I kind of wish
that was all she really talked about.
Yeah, I wish they wouldn't have harped on about all that meaty stuff, which people know anyway.
Yeah, I love that Helen Hunt called them out on the sexistness of the questions, and they were sexist. There's no way they asked the men, "Have you ever been forced to do something that you didn't want to do on set?" They just don't. She's right, they don't. And then the guy BS'd his way through it, saying, "Oh no, we asked these questions to the men. Do you bollocks?"
Yeah. Anyway, I know. They were mostly the same as the men.
Yeah, but I do take Amy's point on board that it is skewed differently in terms of psychology, the male and female experience.
Yeah.
But Sally Field was hilarious in this.
She's just brilliant.
She really... She just had the meeting out of the palm of her hand. Because it's the thing, you sort of forget that it's been almost 30 years since she won her second Oscar.
Yeah. It's how long has it been since she was in a film? Like,
I've no idea. I mean, I'm trying to... Actually, without going on IMDb and looking it up, I'm trying to think of the last film I saw her in.
Well, Forrest Gump is in 1984.
Yeah.
I can't remember seeing her much after that, if at all.
No, I'm really drawing a blank here. I really can't.
Because she's been doing great TV work in the meantime.
Well, yeah, well, she was amazing on ER.
Yeah.
As Mara Tierney's mother. With bipolar,
yeah,
and
Brothers and Sisters,
she
awesome.
Must have won. She must have won awards for that. I mean,
yeah,
she will have. There's no way she won't have. And yeah, you watch Brothers and Sisters. I don't. Never really got round to it, but I've only heard impeccable things.
Yeah, and her Lincoln story was kind of great. I mean, I'm not surprised that she had to fight for that. Because she is a bit old for the part, as she said.
And how pimp does she make Day-Lewis sound? She just makes him sound like the absolute boy. I mean, he is the absolute boy anyway, from a professional standpoint. But it's like, I mean, I have a little bit of hard time in this. This is a guy who dumped Ajani via fax. Was she pregnant at the time? I can't remember, but he definitely dumped her via fax. So he's not all sweetness and light. Maybe he's chilled out since he's... become part of the American intelligentsia by marrying Arthur Miller's daughter.
Yeah.
But she did make him sound like the absolute dude.
Yeah. which Marion? Is Marion, quite kind of
struggling with the language. Do you
think? I thought so. Yeah, but like she started off shaky, but then when she
got to the worst story, she came out of a shell. I mean, it must be really obvious what that is. It wouldn't take much.
Well, you
to
have
find
to
out.
look up the French Razzies.
Yeah, it's not difficult. Hathaway, she just reminds me of Portman. She clearly takes herself so seriously. Was she in one of these a few years ago as well, when she was doing Rachel Getting Married? I think she.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the Love and Other Drugs kind of buzz she had for that too.
Yeah, but at least I like the thing I took from her the most was the stuff about the Oscars, how she was playing to the house rather than playing to the people at home.
Yeah,
and
I felt a bit sorry for her
because I mean you can see she's like had fun and did what she was told, and it's not her fault that James Franco completely phoned it in even more than this performance in Planet of the Apes.
And the thing about her mother who played Fantine years ago, I didn't either.
That's subtle campaigning.
Yeah, it's quite handy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's smart. That's smart. Smart stuff. Hunt?
Lovely.
The comment about Murdoch was just brilliant. Any thoughts on the Murdoch phone hacking scandal? Good God. I don't have anything to say on the subject. Just good God.
I don't like Helen Hunt's Oscar win, but like her generally. Like, she's put in some great performances, like Then She Found Me, which I think she's directed.
She's got a really nice presence. Yeah. And even though, when you stack up, I mean, probably everybody apart from Winslet was superior to her the year that she won, and of course it doesn't help that everybody was British the year that she won. So people often use it as this is an example of xenophobia from the Academy, which is complete BS because Tony Hopkins beat a load of Americans when he won for Silence of the Lambs. So you can't just pick out the one and say, oh yeah, this is them being biased towards Americans, when there are examples of British people who've won over a load of Americans. So I think on that respect, Irwin gets a bad rep. But then again, I don't think Julie Christie and Afterglow, it's really underseen. And then when you see it, it's really underwhelming. And
yeah.
It really is Helena and Dame Judy that year for me.
But they're first time nominees as well.
Yeah. And I think Bonham Carter wasn't happening for that film. I think if it was going to be someone, it would have been Dench. And then Dench won the next year for 4 seconds in Shakespeare in Love, which shows what they thought of Mrs. Brown. So
yeah. Yeah.
Mm. And then who was sat next to Amy? Weiss.
Rachel Weiss.
I love that she clearly didn't know that the Mons was British.
Yeah.
But I did like her story about writing the letter to Morellas. It wasn't modest.
But she's right. Like, English people don't want to, like, be seen to be kind of hunting things.
No, and especially, this is something they didn't bring up, especially women. There are very few things that the British media despise more than an ambitious woman. I mean, look at Victoria Beckham.
Yeah.
So.
True. Very true. Some Victoria Beckham defence going on on the podcast.
Unusual for me.
Are we done?
Is that everyone? Yeah, that's everyone.
Which of these do you think films has the best shot at a nomination?
Oh, well, is Sally Field going supporting?
I think so, yeah.
Then probably her.
Yeah, I would say so too.
Yeah, probably her.
Because I think most of them won't get nominated.
No, it's me too. Watts is really tiny. Vice just isn't going to get the push.
Yeah.
It just isn't. Amy, possible. 50-50 really, in terms of likelihood, because of the size of the role.
Yeah.
Although she is in a film that's probably going to get a lot of traction.
Probably will.
Yeah,
from
and then
yeah.
And then Hathaway is probably in a similar situation ish to Amy, in that it's a big film which should do well and she should have something showy.
Yeah,
but then again, you could easily see her miss out. So,
and Cotillard, I think that's probably going to depend on maybe the critics.
Yeah, we talked about this when we reviewed Rust and Bone, and I just always err on the side of no when it comes to foreign language.
Yeah, I just don't know. She would just need to start showing up, like, in all the stuff that's coming in the next month.
Yeah, she's going to need some... I think Reva's going to win LA, though.
Yeah, I think
But then LA usually go for someone foreign who never has a chance, so...
Yeah, they never pay attention to LA anyway, so...
No, well, they do in everything else, except for, like, the one random thing they go for. LA is really good. Or look at whoever wins Best Director in LA, because they've got a history of going for the one director. They pick their Best Director is quite often the one who comes out of nowhere. But yeah, don't really pay attention to the foreign stuff, because it's just not going to happen with LA.
Okay. Do you want to do Preconceptions?
Yeah, this week, a few films. We've got Mental, Jab Taka Jan, Happy Happy, Unvimiya, Parlez-moi de vous, and The Master.
Okay.
And so, you haven't seen Mental, have you?
No.
No. Mental, my preconceptions on this was it's Toni Collette getting back with the writer-director Muir's Wedding, so I was just expecting something funny-ish and Australian-ish. Nothing else apart from that. Jab Taka Jan. I just love saying it like that. I haven't seen a Yash Chopra film, but I want to, because he did a couple of Sridevi's really big ones, and I want to delve into her back catalogue after English for English, which I enjoyed so much. Happy Happy, any preconceptions on this one?
It sounds light. I had no idea what it was about or anything.
Me either. So. I knew absolutely jack all. And I didn't know any of the people involved as well. And usually for Scandinavia, I know somebody. A Better Life, it's the same title as the Bashir film. It's not the Bashir film. Guillaume Canet. This was on at a French film festival around it's all over the country at the moment, actually, from Scotland down to London, but it's only 4 days, 4 films here. This one, all I knew was that it was him, And that was it. And so I thought, okay, that'll do.
That'll do.
Yeah, and the other one, what did I say that the Canadian title was?
On Air.
On Air, yeah. It's the French title literally means something like, let's talk about you, or something like that. Karen Viard, well, I knew that she was like playing a radio talk show host. Well, radio phone-in host, and so...
That sounds good.
Okay. Mm. The Master was on, and that was when I decided to go and see that. Preconceptions for The Master?
I really like Paul Thomas Anderson. I've given all of his films, like... I think they're all 4-star films.
Right.
Not 5-4.
Mm.
What do you
Cast.
Think?
Anderson, everything I've given him has been between 5 and 8 out of 10, so it's 3 or 4 stars.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything I thought was bad, but equally I haven't seen anything that I truly loved. And I think Magnolia is the top end of that.
Yeah, I would go with that. Despite the frogs.
Yeah, in spite of the frogs, indeed. Yeah, and Amy and Viscount Hoffman are two of my faves. Yeah, so first one I'll get underway is Mental. Which, as mentioned, was written and directed by PJ Hogan, who did Muir's Wedding, My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah. Which is good.
And then a couple of not so good films.
Does this feature a wedding?
No, it features a lot of mental people, hence the title. It's about a family in a small town in Australia. Anthony LaPaglia is the dad who's never there. He's the local mayor.
Cool.
And his wife has 5 girls. And she's obsessed with The Sound of Music. So she's a complete embarrassment to them. So it starts with like a tracking shot from a helicopter and then pans in on her spinning around in the back garden while the washing's on the lines. Starts with her iPod singing to The Sound of Music. And they're an embarrassment to everybody. LaPaglia comes home about once every week or so. Can't remember the daughter's names when he does.
That's terrible.
It's funny. And Kerry Fox is the next door neighbour who's OCD and she wants it all to be like a Tim Burton, Edward Scissorhands type. Everyone's got like their bins in a row and all this sort of stuff. So she can't handle this woman's madcapness. So eventually she has a breakdown and gets thrown in the local asylum or facility, shall I say. So as you can tell, just all these little like things that are going on, it's a very silly film.
Yeah.
But it is really quite funny. It's the tone of it is stuff you shouldn't be laughing at. Like when Colette goes to see the mother in the institution, she starts talking about how she first started going out with LaPaglia, and she said, "Well, I think you could basically call it rape, because he raped me on my second date." And then she goes into saying how she was saying no, and he ended up doing it. And she said, "Well, I'll give him 3 weeks to call back," and he called back, and that's the romantic part of the story. So it's completely inappropriate, and there's some stuff where it just goes way too far in the third act. Towards the end, but for the most part, it's really quite sweet how Colette comes into these girls' lives and starts giving them some like self-esteem and saying it's not you that's mental, it's all the other people around you. So she's like pointing out how Kerry Fox next door is obsessive compulsive. She's got a lesbian daughter who she's completely in denial over. Deborah Mailman from Sapphires turns up as a one of because Colette's been in the institution before, but people don't really know. She knows Colette from that, and then she ends up eloping with Kerry Fox's lesbian daughter. It's worth seeing. Just it's interesting if you've seen The Sapphires to see if it go for something really, really broadly comedic.
So are there too many mad characters then?
I wouldn't say there's too many mad characters, but I think they just tend to just go too far at times. So because Kerry Fox is obsessive compulsive, at one point they've got all the girls around there, and Toni Collette says that they're all going to menstruate over her white couches unless she gets them some pads very quickly.
Lovely.
So yeah, exactly.
We're about to excision.
Yeah, yeah. It's excision meets the dreamers without the nudity or the greenness. In the third act, it really does spoil the film because it just doesn't really go anywhere interesting, and it cops out a bit, and it's just disappointing all round. But yeah, so mixed bag, but overall, I think it enough of it entertains for enough of it to be worth a look.
Okay.
Definitely check it out if it comes online.
Cool.
High 3 stars.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So on to your...
yeah, the Bollywood classic.
Jabhatakjan.
Jabhatakjan.
It sounds like an advert slogan or something. Like
yeah,
noodles.
It's basically... Yeah, it's like a poem. It means like until I breathe my last breath or something like that. It's like... Watch the trailer. You'll see it used in context. Yeah, so this is 175 minutes long.
Why?
Because it's Indian. And because it's Yash Chopra, and he is like legend. And he actually died about a month ago. But I think it was going to be his final film anyway. So the end credits are all pictures of like video of him, footage of him on set with the actors. And at the beginning, there's like a little tribute to him. And of course, the 175, I think it's really probably 165, but there's a 10-minute interval in the middle because it's a Bollywood film, so you got to go and relieve yourself. Metaphorically and literally. yeah, so this is literally a film of two halves, and
yeah, literally, yes.
No, you've no idea. This is, to summarise what this film is, it is The Hurt Locker meets The End of the Affair, as if told by Wong Kar-wai. That is exactly what this film is, because it starts off and you see him, and he is the Hurt Locker. He is the number one expert in the Indian Army for bomb disposal, and he's done 98 of them, and no bomb too big, no risk too big, no bomb too small. And he doesn't wear the it's literally saying he doesn't bother wearing the protective stuff, just like Renner in the Hurt Locker, and he just goes in there and just snip snap snop and gets in, gets out. And it's really improbable, the whole thing. He saves this girl from drowning, and so he puts his jacket round her. And she wakes up the next day and she finds a diary of sorts in his jacket, which details a love story that happened 10 years previously in London between him when he was a busker and a waiter, and he had a load of crap jobs, and this girl. So then it cuts back to that story. And it's really quite entertaining. There's nothing unusual about it. It's mildly trite. It's like it's not an arranged marriage, but she's going to be marrying somebody that her father wants her to, and she meets him at the engagement thing, and then they start seeing each other more and more and more. Not romantically immediately, but... And so you've got the songs thrown in there, you've got the dance routines thrown in there, and they're fine, they're not great. But it's all going along quite nicely, and the guy is hilarious. He's easily 45 if he's a day.
And how old's the love interest?
Oh, she's like mid-20s.
Right.
And FHM India's sexiest woman in the world. there's a lot of goodwill created, and it goes along quite nicely. And it gets to the end of the first half, and it really ties in with really nicely with where he's going to become, because you know he's going to become Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
And it's the way that it fastens together. It's like, okay, I get that. That's good characterization, because he's been in this situation. This is the bridge that gets him to there. That's believable. I get it. Great. And then the second half, it's the first half hour is like a documentary of this girl who he rescued at the beginning, following him around doing his Hurt Locker stuff. And then the last hour is some of the most god awful, trite plotting you've ever seen. And it's to the point that I just sat there and thought, I cannot take this film seriously anymore. I've just got to treat it on camp value. And it's not just one. There's about two or three or four. They just keep on piling this stuff on. And you're thinking, this is just so ridiculous. I've seen this so many times. And how did you think that this was even slightly going to be satisfactory dramatically?
Is it just like plot twists and Stupid revelations, or is it?
Yes, yeah, stupid revelations, stupid plot mechanisms to get the themes across. And the stupid thing with it is, it's not even that difficult, because the whole point is that you got him now, how he is now, broken man. This is where the one car blindness of it all comes in. Now he's broke. It's 2046. He's a broken man. He can't get over the girl from his past, and so the new girl wants him, but he doesn't want anything to do with her. Hi, Zhang Ziyi. No, I don't want you. So it is very 2046, and but. So you can show how he was a different person back then, he was alive back then, and now he's a shell of his former self. You can do that in less overdone, ridiculous ways than the ways that they choose to. But because there's so much, because I buy the relationship, even if not the casting, from the first half, and it's underpinned quite well, that's enough. They can't wreck it. No matter how much they try in the second half, you're still invested.
They built the foundation.
Yeah, the foundation is solid enough that it doesn't matter what terrors they do. But yeah, you were sort of like half thinking about seeing this, and I sort of tweak it to put you off.
Yeah, you kind of nipped it in the bud.
Yeah, because I don't think this is the most... This isn't the film, if you don't watch many Indian films, this isn't the film to go and see. No. English of English is the film to go and see because it's got a crossover. Hopefully, yeah. Talash, which is either out next week or the week after, I'm not quite sure, with Amir Khan. That looks like a straight down the line thriller. So I think that might be more of a go see this one.
This is too overblown and kind of primitive.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and the songs aren't that great. They're fine. But yeah, anyone who's seen a lot of like American films over the last 20 years of their life will just crap all over this, quite frankly.
Yeah.
In terms of the story, but I do think it does get the hooks in, despite itself. And
rating?
3 stars, because the first half is 4 stars, the second half is 2 stars.
Yeah.
So it's overall about 3 stars.
Okay. Next we have, continuing in foreign vein, yes. Happy Happy.
Yes, this is on like, what, about 7 cinemas, I'd guess?
Yeah, not many. It's it was Norway's submission for the Oscars, right?
Yes.
Was it last year?
Last year, yeah.
And it's about 2 couples who live next door to each other in a rural part of Norway. One of the couples is like new to the area. So the other couple are trying to get friendly with them. One of the... In a way...
I thought you were going to say, get busy.
That happens later. One of the couples, Kai and Eric, are unhappy. She's sickeningly optimistic. And he kind of puts her down in any way he can. And the other couple are Elizabeth and Sieg. And they've recently moved to the area because Elizabeth had an affair with another guy.
I thought it's because she lost her Scarlett Johansson lookalike competition.
Ooh, I think that's a little harsh.
Jessica Biel. Anyway.
Maybe like 10 years ago, Jessica Biel. And so basically there's a great deal of friction between the two couples. Something happens.
A lot of friction.
Yep. Something happens. Figurative and actual friction. Mm. Because of something that happens and stuff ensues
yes.
from there. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's not happy exactly, but it's not as miserable as it could have been.
Is this just me? But I watched this, and the first 10 minutes, I was fuming mad, because the first... maybe it's just me, tell me. Was the beginning of this a complete rip-off of Junebug, or am I crazy? Because...
It had that kind of...
Because there's like 4 different things where it's almost as if they're trying to just copy Amy Adams' character from Junebug and give it to this girl. Like how she's like constantly going on about how about the woman being thin. She's like, oh, they're here. She even has the, you can flash your light, not if you're lonely at night conversation. There's something else about, she almost does the you were not when she's, there's like, I was just thinking, oh, don't, you can't rip that.
Maybe.
That's sacrilege.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's hard to tell because Amy Adams' character in Junebug's obviously this kind of American South kind of, I don't know,
adorable,
like country girl. And this other woman, it's a different kind of culture, so you can't really compare it for me. But
it made me appreciate Amy even more, if that is humanly possible.
But this woman's really good, right?
Who's carry on talking, then I'll get there.
Okay. But yeah, it's quirky like Junebug, because it treats kind of darker things a little lighter, but it's reminding me of like something Thomas Vinterberg would have made.
Maybe mean, like the subplot with the adopted African boy was a bit, yeah, it was a bit dogma-ish. How you got like the local lad who like says, "Oh yeah, let's play slave."
Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't mind that because I think it kind of worked because of
the innocence. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the kids is kind of bullying the other, but his parents are like don't love each other. They're a mess. You know, they're not good role models. So, what do you expect, kind of thing?
Well, no. I think with this, there is 5 minutes, and this is not me being churlish or anything. There's 5 minutes in this that is absolutely first rate, and it's all at the end. And there's about two or three scenes at the end. There's a scene in the bathroom. From then on out, basically, up to the penultimate scene, which are really well acted. So you've got the scene in the bathroom, and then you've got the scene with her husband at the outside with the kids. Yeah, those scenes are really, really good, and you see the actors transcending what's there on the page. It's just the underpinning isn't there, and for me to really care once you've got there. But still, in spite, even though everything's so arctic beforehand, it really gives it a boost.
Yeah, so, it's arctic because people are too upfront about things, but I kind of found that
yeast infections.
Yeah, was definitely too upfront.
Yeah,
but I just kind of found that kind of charming in a way, and I didn't think it detracted from like the humanistic aspects of their relationships with each other. I kind of felt like it added to it almost. Mm. Like, because it could have been way too overwrought, like with secrets and...
Yeah. What I liked about the characterization is that with her, it's pretty clear that she wants this to be coming from her. She doesn't want to have an affair with, and it's just the first random guy that comes into her life. She wants the intimacy to come from her husband.
Yeah.
But she's just not getting it. I mean, for... We find out why she's not getting it halfway through.
I think that's kind of obvious from the beginning as well. I saw that coming a mile off.
Yeah, I saw it. I was sort of like half thinking it when he was that brutal about her looks in bed.
Yeah.
But then once you get to the let's go for a run, I thought, oh, okay. Oh,
I you're on about the bathroom scene. I don't like what that implies.
Right.
From what's going to happen after the end, if you get my drift, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think they needed to do that. Although they don't go quite so far.
I think more in terms of just the how they are, just the physicality of how they are. It's just him. He's not got his arms around her really, really tight or anything. It's just that really believable, casual intimacy.
Yeah.
It's just when the characters are just being the characters. That's what I've just found really uncommon about it.
Yeah.
And it is well acted. I think she's like becoming a big deal over there because of this.
I'm not surprised. I found her really kind of just easy to relate to, really.
Mm. Did you think the guy deserved to have everybody thinking that his...
his what?
He was such an object of... I was going to be very crude. Was he believable as a multi... Everybody's wants this guy type of desire?
Not really. It's only two people, isn't there?
Well, it's his wife as well.
It was a bit of a Lady Chatterley situation.
Nice. Nicely done. Yeah, so... yeah, this is watchable stuff, but nothing I'd go out of my way to see. I mean, I literally didn't.
No, it was better than I thought it was going to be, but... Yeah, I'm not surprised it didn't get nominated.
Not at all.
Yeah. B minus.
3 stars, just for a change. But a low one.
Yeah.
Only really because of the end. Right. So I'd say we were going into the French Quarter now, but because there's two films, it's the French half, I guess. This is, like I said, it's everywhere, but nowhere, if you know what I mean. It's this festival's been going for years. I saw two of this. The first one, A Better Life, Guillaume Canet. This film. Jab, Tucker, Jam was a film of two halves. This is a film in thirds. First third of this is him. It's like it's going to be financial misery porn. Like a very relevant...
Oh, God.
I've got my hands cupped over my face like I'm shocked at the moment. but it's all about him. He wants to be a chef. He goes to a restaurant to get a job, gets turned down, meets the waitress there, shags her that night because he's Guillaume Canet. And then he decides, when he's going out with her, he comes across a house overlooking a lake, decides that'd be great to turn into a restaurant, except you've got no money. So what does he do? He goes to the bank to get a loan. As down payment, the guy says, the one thing you shouldn't do is get a load of loans to cover it, because a lot of people go bankrupt that way. What does he do? The way he gets the down payment is by getting a load of different loans that are just going to completely cripple him financially. His girlfriend was like a waitress at a restaurant, and then she gets offered a promotion to somewhere in Canada. So she's got a kid, and she says to him, you can have the kid, I'll go over to Canada, get a place, and then send for him in a month. And of course she doesn't send for him. So then the second third is like Alice in the Cities type thing, where you got a guy stuck alone with the kid while the mum's off on a Jean Todd. And they sort of like drop the financial side of it for long periods, and it just turns into when's the mother coming back? We're living in Skid Row. All this
pursuit
sort
of happiness.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. Thanks for reminding me of that. And then final third, they try and go and find the mum. And the final third, this is more random comparisons. It's like Slumdog Millionaire, where the final third, in and of itself, is fine. And it's really well acted. Well, unlike Slumdog Millionaire, Canet really comes to play in the third act. But they just, because it's just been so, for so long, like the first third, it's impossible to care because you've just got them stupidly doing. One of your common criticisms is inconsistent characterisation. And yeah. At the beginning of this, he's going, I'm not giving it up. They say, you can sell it for a small profit. And he's like, I'm not giving it up. This is my dream. This thing's within, there's nowhere else to eat within 50 miles or for whatever. And it'll make it big. And he just refuses. He's really stubborn, refuses to sell. And then, of course, when he eventually has to come to, he just folds like a deck of cards. And there's another aspect, like the kid, when he's with the kid nicks a couple of trainers from the local sports shop, and he like demands that he take them back there, and he pays like half of his monthly salary for these stupid, stupid trainers because he's taken the anti-theft tags off. And but his, the moral of the story was, we don't steal, we work hard. And then of course what yeah. ends up happening, he goes and starts nicking a load of money, and that's how he like, ends up staying afloat.
That's so terrible.
Yeah, so this that's the first. That's what all happens in the like the what happens in the first third doesn't mesh with what happens in the second third. So when he gets to the final bit, it's quite well done, and they're trying to push it in lyrical things, but it's isolated itself because it doesn't really it's really not smooth at all across the sections, and it's a real struggle to care. But yeah, Can 8, nice performance, gets better the longer it goes. The kid's nice. He's Lebanese. That's the part of the plotting, and it's put together unspectacular, but it's fine. But yeah, underwhelming is the word. Probably a low 3 stars because it's not bad.
Yeah,
but it's just
a little higgledy piggledy.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas the VR's, I loved. Absolutely love this film tonight. Just got back from it before we started.
Yeah,
and it's just she's gorgeous in this film. I mean that in every single sense that you. She looks foxy for a start, which she doesn't always.
Yeah,
but the performance is so restrained and so gorgeous. It's about what it is basically about is she's a nationally known like. Frasier type jockey,
yeah.
But she's anonymous. She's called Melina, and no, that's part of a contract that there's no pictures of her or anything like this. What the story is that she's searching for her a real mother. She's obviously who obviously didn't raise her. And it's so beautifully done. And so she gets the information off the people. She says, are you sure this time? So you can tell that she's been through this sort of thing before. And she goes to this small town to where her mother, where this woman that she thinks is her mother is living. And she finds out that she volunteers at a local charity place. So she starts volunteering at the charity place. And Nicolas Duvauchel.
Yeah.
The Eternally Dashing is the grandson of her mother. So really her nephew?
Yeah.
Yeah. She meets him there and he invites her to a party. And so then she leaves her ID card there so he knows where she lives and then he starts turning up. Also, so actually the comparison piece to this is People Like Us that we saw the other week. Because that was about a guy who, unbeknownst to his sister, has an ulterior motive. Whereas with this, it's she's got like the mother, the sister, and then Duvauchel as the nephew, and they do a similar thing that Duvauchel gets interested in her, but it doesn't have the ick factor that I had with People Like Us, because she's not doing any flirting whatsoever. She's quite obsessive compulsive. She wipes down seats before she sits on them, that sort of stuff. She won't take off her gloves. She doesn't want to handle clothes.
Oh my god!
She doesn't want to handle clothes at the charity outreach, which is what they do. it's funny. This is the other thing. It's not just some like eternally like tugging at the heartstrings. Treatise on adoption. It is really quite funny quite often, and but yeah, she holds everything back, and it's when all the chinks of light come through, and all you can see all the years of hurt just etched on this woman's face. But yeah, Duvauchel, I want to have a quick word about him because this is a really lovely performance from him. Because when you get someone, he's a good-looking boy. There's just no getting around it.
Yeah.
And even in a film that I loved, that I haven't pimped on this podcast half as much as I should because I think it's perfect, is The World Digger's Daughter from earlier this year. And Duvauchel was like the really dashing pilot who the local girl falls in love with. And with this, he's like back at home. His failed photographer can't get his career off the ground, and there's so much vulnerability. It's a very laid back performance, but you can just see the little hints of depression and why he's down and all this sort of stuff, and you just want to give the guy a hug. And so when you can see him, like, he's interested in this older woman who's like really classy, and it's quite touching.
Yeah,
and it's quite an achievement, because when you look like he does as another man, I'm not really gonna feel that sorry for you, just naturally, because things won't come that hard.
You have to work for it.
Yeah, if you look like Nicholas Dorval, you won't have had to work that. You won't have had as many problems as other guys in life. Let's just put it that way.
Is it like a Keanu Reeves in Something's Gotta Give kind of situation?
No, it's not that bad. But yeah, so he's a really lovely performance, and they handle that much better than people like us did. It's got this gorgeous score, modern score, with like piano and guitars and all this sort of stuff, and it just breathes naturally, and it doesn't overtly go for the emotion, and as a result, it gets the hooks in. Yeah. And so without her, this would be quite a good film, because of the basic nuts and bolts, how it all goes together.
Yeah.
But with her, it elevates into a really good film, because she's excellent, and it's the best I've seen her, and I've seen her in quite a few things. It's the best I've seen her by a distance, and I really hope this gets a proper release, because it won't.
It might, you never know.
Well... Yeah, hope. Well, yeah.
It'd be next year, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we can live and hope. But yeah, any way that you get a chance to see this,
what's it called again?
It's called, the French title is Parlez-moi de vous, and the Canadian festival title was On Air. Yeah, I can't say enough good things. 5 stars, 9 out of 10. Really, really, really enjoyed this.
Nice. Good.
So, tell me about the film of the week.
Okay, this is The Master, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. And it's based loosely on the life of L. Ron Hubbard, who founded Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
Although, that's very vague if you ask me, but we'll talk about this later.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix is Freddy. We see him in the Navy at the beginning, during World War II.
Is this going to be the music? Why I'm village people in the Navy?
God, no.
Sorry, but carry on, do.
Freddy's like a bit of a Neanderthal. He's kind of behaves erratically. He's kind of fixated on sex.
Looks much like me, then.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit. Just with a cleft lip.
Yes.
And he drifts from place to place. Winds up on a boat full of people dedicated to a cause. The cause is led by the Master, who is Philip Seymour Hoffman. Character is Lancaster Dodd. Very well named. The rest of the film's kind of about him trying to mold Freddy into a decent human being. Amy Adams plays Lancaster's wife, and she's less tolerant of Freddy, as is his son. And that is
she's less tolerant of a lot of things.
Yeah.
In this film.
Yeah, she doesn't like her kids being taken pictures.
She doesn't like stamina either, apparently.
Should we talk about her first? Because I felt like
I didn't mention her in my review of this. I didn't even say the words Amy or Adams in my review of this film.
I felt she was the same in every scene apart from the scene to which you just referred.
with the sink scene.
Yeah.
Where she bends Hoffman over the sink and encourages him, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. Well, I think it's against type, obviously, and that sort of sternness, I think she does quite well.
She does it okay, but there's not a lot of range there, really. It's
no.
I get the impression that the character's supposed to be puritanical, but I didn't really get that.
A bit crazed.
Yeah. It wasn't crazed enough for me.
No. No, I liked her in it, but I didn't really think she had much to do. And much to do. She did everything for him. But,
I think the film is strongest in the first hour, I would say.
If you take out the opening 20 minutes, I don't particularly care for the first couple of reels. But as soon as he gets on the boat...
Yeah, that's the strongest bit, yeah.
I looked at my watch after 20 minutes, which is when they got on the boat, and I didn't look at my watch again until 100 minutes into the film, which is around about when he's having the full indoctrination, walking from the glass to the wood. And I think that's how long it sustained itself.
Yeah, yeah, that. Yeah, I would agree with that.
And
I think the best is when they have that scene where he interrogates him.
The processing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. This. What. The word that just defines this film for me is uneven. Across every single aspect of it, but when the scenes come. They do hit home, and they are really quite powerful, and that is one of them. Although I do think that when he says you've got to do it, and you've got to do it without blinking, you do just start fixating on whether or not Joaquin Phoenix is blinking.
Yeah, amps up the tension.
Exactly, that intensifies it intensifies the scene because you're watching something very specific. You're watching something in the middle of the screen. Your whole attention is burned into his face.
Yeah.
So I do think it's quite clever. But it is uneven, and I think all the performances are uneven as well. Hoffman, when he's in that stuff like that, when he's quiet, and he's piercing, I think he's quite brilliant. But then when he has to go more quirky and like out there and random,
when he's dancing. And singing. Or...
Hammy is the word that comes to mind.
It wouldn't be the first time, would it?
Sizable pork. Sizable pork, let's just put it that way. Phoenix.
The thing about Phoenix is, it isn't an even role, really. No.
He has to brood for half of it, and then he has to be crazy for half of it. Basically.
Yeah, and I think he does a great job of, like, being this slovenly person, this Neanderthal at the beginning, and still letting a little bit of the faith creep in. Like,
yeah.
I love the way that it shows in the final scene where he's sleeping with the British girl.
Right.
Like, where he kind of repeats the processing thing in a different way, which I thought was really way of saying how much he's taken on board, but not really.
It's still his charm / personality take on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to the elephant in the room, which we didn't address in Preconception Corner, and we didn't address it because I'd completely forgotten that Lena Endre was in this film beforehand.
Who was she?
She was in my favourite scene in the film. She was the mother when he goes back to Mrs. Solstad.
Yes.
And for the first half of that scene, I didn't recognise that it was Lena Endre, and. All of this emotion and sympathy and empathy pours out of her in that scene, and it highlights the unevenness. That's the only time I got any real proper emotion out of it. The rest of it, it's all very situation based, and you've got to be interested in the. It's all very intellectual, and. That is the one time when it sort of stopped, slowed down, took what's going on out of it, and just focused in on something.
We're told away, like, it's the only time it got to domestic concerns. It was more about spiritual. It was more about the grander picture, really. The whole way through.
I'm not going to do another. I could do another Blueberry digression, but I'm not going to.
The thing I got from this is it feels specific, but I don't think it is specific. I think it's pretty vague. The whole way through, it's kind of plodding and, which I think it's trying to be, but it's just kind of tepid and roundabout.
It is just all over the shop in terms of the tone. From one scene to the next, it can be really, like the scenes with the processing, it's really intense and really like focused. And the next scene can be really much more random or have a complete, like it's like watching a different film. And that is the Paul Thomas Anderson problem. I mean, even in Magnolia, for most of it, he's got a really controlled idea of what he's doing. And then you've got Frogs and you've got Julianne Moore having sucked so many cocks.
Being terrible. And you've got that awful, well, I don't know if you like this, the bit where they all sing the same song.
I don't mind it, but I can see why people don't like it. So
always seems to be something that spoils his films.
Yeah, and it's Paul Thomas Anderson. It's the him. It's him putting his stamp on it because the man isn't humorless.
Yeah.
Which is usually a good thing. But I think his films could really do without it, without having his type of humour. Which is why I don't get why they're so universally praised.
They're ambitious, I would say, but mostly.
I don't know anybody that I could recommend this to. Confidently. There's nobody that I know who I could say, you know what?
Yeah.
You'd love this. Go watch it.
Yeah. No, I don't think I could either.
And it was, I was similar with There Will Be Blood.
I think it looks lovely. It looks like it was made a while ago. I don't think it looks like a 2012 film.
No. No. Well, I
love the score as well.
I hate the score.
Really?
With a passion. That's the one thing I actively dislike about this film. I used to be a really big Radiohead fan. I mean, I saw Glastonbury 97, the epic, highest point of their careers. But I wasn't mad. All the stuff that I really liked in There Will Be Blood's score was the previously released music, which is what got the thing ineligible in the first place.
I mean,
I think with the dramatically where the final big scene goes and where he's the
when he goes to England.
Yeah, well, no, the actual scene, where the concept of everyone having a master, etc., I think that weakens. I don't think that stands up with the point that with what he's done throughout the film. I think it's just questionable and weak, and I think it would be better with that if he hadn't gone there. But
I don't know, because it's sort of about, it's about kind of searching for faith, really, or more about kind of trying to implant faith in other people, because he's kind of ambivalent the whole way through.
But what I find the interesting thing is the seduction, because we can see the stuff that he's been saying, like how he keeps on saying throughout the film, "We've met before," and then he doesn't say anything. He doesn't come up for about 45 minutes, and it's like, "We've met before, isn't it bugging you?" Of course, you know before you know that's going to come back, and it's the thing I found good about the final scene, the big final scene, was again it's Phil and him, it's just that connecting and it's that seduction and it's the how he draws him in. That's what's interesting. How he draws him in is this is why it's emotionally doesn't really take for me, because the interest is the how. And it's not, I don't really care for any of the characters in this at all.
Right.
But I'm interested in the situation that they're in up to a point, which is why it's so difficult. There's nobody that I'm going to say go see this film. And it's not because I don't like it. I'll tell people to go see a film I don't like if I think they'll like it.
Yeah.
But there's no one. I mean, I know one of the guys I was just up in Leeds with thought Rust and Bone was really overrated. Hated The Tree of Life. I'm not going to go tell them to see this film.
I know somebody who is a big Paul Thomas Anderson fan and didn't like this film.
Really?
Yeah. But that was a one-star film, he said.
Really? Well, this is the thing. I mean, I don't hate it at all. I don't even dislike it. I think aspects of it are good. I just think it ends up So this is where I'm shifting onto the rating. It's a 3-star, and I've no idea if it's a 5 or a 6.
Right.
But I think it's probably a 5, because the weaker stuff balances out the good stuff.
Maybe a six. I think
I'm open. I'm open to suggestion.
It's a B for me.
Right.
Because I think it does say a lot. Despite...
Because every Anderson film is for you.
Well. Yeah, mostly B pluses, but yeah. This is kind of a low B. This is like a full grade below.
Right, okay.
But yeah, what do you think it's going to get awards? Love? Julie Phoenix, right?
It'll get Best Picture and Director nominated at the Oscars, I would have thought, in the way that The Tree of Life got Best Picture and Best Director nominated. It's the 5% rule.
Yeah.
And it's that the directors respond to this. The directors will respond to this much more than any other branch. Phoenix, I'd be shocked if he didn't get nominated, just because the sort of thing they like and are impressed by. What's happening with Hoffman? Is he going lead as well, or is he going?
I don't think so.
They can't put him supporting.
They can, because it's not a big role.
Yeah,
I think he's lead, yeah.
It's their relationship.
But well, Geoffrey Rush is lead in The King's Speech, but...
He is, of course he is.
But it's not, you know, I think it's going supporting.
If they shove him supporting, I can't see how he doesn't get in then.
Exactly.
Amy's got a decent chance, but...
I really hope not, because at this rate she's going to end up like Thelma Ritter.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to win for this, surely.
No.
So, okay. So, I tweeted that I was going to see this and A More, which I saw on Friday.
Yeah, should we talk about the distribution of A More?
We can do. Do you want to have a bitch?
74 miles. That's where the closest cinema to Birmingham is showing this. But ridiculous.
Yeah, you would have thought better of a Michael Haneke film.
The West Midlands is the... largest local government area. It's like 2.5 million people. Like, London isn't all one.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere to see it in the West Midlands. It's just ridiculous. You've got 2.5 million people in the country. In Greater Birmingham.
Which may as well be the country.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, but no. I mean, so basically I was tweeting that this was likely not going to be a easy time, this double bill of The Master and A More. And our friend Irini replied and said how it would make a good podcast feature if we talked about the art of balancing a double bill.
My main suggestion when I thought of this was, don't include an Alejandro Gonzalez in your YouTube film.
Yeah.
Don't. In your research, just don't.
Because it'll all just meld into one anyway, won't it?
Yeah, and you'll probably end up wanting to kill yourself afterwards anyway. So don't do Babel first, which I've done in the past.
And then Beautiful.
I think... Does this sound right? Curse of the Golden Flower and Babel? I think that was one of my double bills.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, it's the same.
It sounds right, doesn't it?
Yeah. So basically, I thought that A More would be better last, which is how I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, no, I thought it would be better first, but I had to see it last because of timings.
Right.
Because I wanted to end on a more happier note. Like, I thought I would get tired during A More.
Yes.
Which actually I did, but we'll wait 2 weeks to discuss that.
30th, it's everywhere here at the 30th, so it's not like it's not coming here.
Yeah.
But,
Whereas she thought that nothing could possibly follow A More. We'll get onto that as well. but yeah, I mean, have you got any other memorable double features? I've got one good one.
What's your one good one?
My one good one is I saw Atonement, at my local cinema 7 miles away, and I was like shell-shocked and devastated in that. I know you're not big on Atonement, but I had a big reaction to it. And then, 15 minutes later, I walked downstairs and saw Knocked Up, which I like a lot. I don't love it, but it's a good time.
Yeah.
And I even like Katherine Heigl in it, which is saying something.
Despite the sexism.
Katherine Heigl typecast as uptight. And
true.
So yeah, that's just one that screams out as me as
I'm just gonna needle. I'm gonna needle you here.
Go on then.
Mine. My memorable double bill was the Venice Film Festival, The Men Who Stare at Goats, and White Space.
Yes.
Which you didn't do.
No.
What were you seeing that night? Were you picking up? You were picking up Tam, weren't you?
No, I went round the back of the thing to see him like come out of the of the cinema.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was like a foot away from him while you were watching the film about what's it about? Miscarriages or something.
Premature baby.
Yeah.
White Space is just I really wish that people could see this film.
It hasn't got a release, has it?
No, it never got released. It is such a beautifully made film, and so having that and those were both the night that it that they premiered, and to I actually put a number of miles it was worth travelling to see, which was how I was judging whether I am how worth going to Venice was, and I actually put that it was worth 480 miles to see White Space.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to do Shag, Marry or Kill?
I hadn't even thought of this one. Oh goodness, yes. Okay, so I
want to Shag... be a lover, not a fighter this week. Because I can't kill
you've
anything.
You've only got two, so yeah. You can just have your peace on the side, and then you're every week. So
not
Shag
unlike
is...
Happy Happy.
Exactly. Shag is the film you'd watch every weekend for the rest of your life. Shag is your one-night stand, so you'd watch right now if you could. And I would not, even though I think it's better, I would not want to spend 176 minutes right now watching Jug Dugga John.
Really?
So, no, not 176 minutes. So I'm going
to
go
I'll
with
book
Mint.
You a taxi if you want to go.
Put me a latte to wake me up. or a mocha. I would watch Mental right now.
Okay.
So what would you watch right now?
Happy Happy.
Yeah. So you'd be marrying, which is watching every weekend for the rest of your life. You'd watch The Master every weekend for the rest of your life.
I guess.
Given the choice.
Yeah.
Between the two. Yeah, mine's an obvious one. I would watch Madame VR.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, that's a super film. I would kill, which is burn every single cinematic negative of...
Can I kill the Canair film? Because it sounded terrible. It really sounded awful. So.
Yeah, I think it probably... Well, yeah, you can kill it, so it's not... So, but I'm not going to agree, because we've appeased Irini by putting the double bill thing in, but if we both kill a Guillaume Canet film, she will not be pleased. So... So I'm going to kill Happy Happy because that they didn't earn the last 5 minutes. And
we said Marion Cotillard's not getting an Oscar nomination, so she's not going to be happy about that either.
No. Well, she should, based on what I've seen so far. Yeah. Oh, no. VR just kicked her out the top five.
She's not in my top five either.
She's sixth. Oh, bless her. She's got such problems.
And she's got no leg.
She's going out with a whale. The Watson Factor. No, this is any time you've got the most Googled Bollywood star 4 years in a row, FHM Sexiest Woman in the World, Emma Watson is in for a bit of a pounding in the non-good way. Mental, Colette looks quite trashily nice for her, quite dirtily nice. But I'm not going to disparage Watson by placing her above her. Jab Taka Jan, they're two very nice looking women, but I'm going to sandwich Watson in there. But Katrina Kaif is just ridiculously good looking.
Happy
the Scarlet alike. No, I think I'll have him.
No. We're not counting the round table in this then.
No, that would just be too cool. well this is the thing. We've got the say do clause with Amy. Because if it was the round table, I'd take Amy.
No, really?
In the film over Watson, yeah. But not I'd take
Vice. That's about it of that group.
Well, always. Viard looks really foxy, but no. So who's in the master?
Nobody. Yeah, apart from the girl who gropes him. I don't know who she is though.
Does that narrow it down? I'm gonna go with the Watson Factor 2 behind the FHM India's sexiest woman in the world, Katrina Kaif.
I'll take your word for it.
Poupon Range.
Mm.
There's nothing really in Happy and the Master, is there?
No.
So if I just say Duval Shell.
No, Kane.
You think Kane normally? Well, Kane's. Well, you like the facial hair, though, don't you?
Yeah.
So Kane has a lot of facial hair in this.
Yeah.
So there's a possible 3.0 if you include Duval Shell as well. Jab Taka Jan, the guy. No, he'll be too old for you. You go on about the old thing, don't you? Anthony the Paglia, no, not anymore.
No, maybe about 15 years ago.
When he was in Murder One with Stanley Tucci, yes. But
wasn't he
no.
in ER? I think of the wrong person.
I'm not sure. He might have been, briefly. Oh. Are you thinking of Anthony Edwards?
No.
Goose.
The Paglia and Edwards.
Both Anthony's. The pack. He might have been. Yeah. So you've got. It's all French. It's all Gallic, though, isn't it? It's Duval Shell, Canet, and so there's a literal range on the range between 1.0 and 3.0. So that's yes.
Okay.
So every week we say next week, but you're going to tell us that we have something. What do we have?
A blog.
Yeah. Anything else?
A Twitter.
And?
Blogs. The blogs moveforpodcast.blogspot.co.uk. The Twitter is moveforpodcast. We're on iTunes, Feedburner. Anything else?
My blog.
Your blog in the moveforblog.blog.co.uk. My blog, ultimatic.com. I've started putting the podcast up on my blog as well now.
Not before time. Right, so next week, Silver Linings Playbook and Gambit are out tomorrow. No, sorry, Wednesday.
It's tomorrow, so, actually, but...
Well, it is tomorrow now, yeah.
Tuesday now.
Yeah, so those two are definite. End of Watch is out on Friday.
Well, yeah, I'll definitely see those three.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else meaningful, unless you're planning on catching up with Twilight, which you promised last week.
No, I don't think I promised. I don't recall promising. Maybe it's like The Master. I just ended up imagining it rather than actually recalling it.
But this one's supposed to be quite good. But
I think it just means less crap than the others.
Yeah.
Quite frankly. There's a film called Starbuck, which looks quite fun. It's about a guy who, under the pseudonym of Starbuck, fathered about 550 people as a sperm donor. It's French. It's a French film.
Shocking.
It's allegedly out this weekend, but no. I think it's the Silver Linings Gambit End of Watch.
Was he, did he have a relay or was he on call or what? I suppose we'll have to watch it to find out, right?
Yeah, it looks quite fun. But, I mean the film, not the prospect of, masturbating into 500 little cups. Well, maybe if you had Amy Adams ordering you to do it.
Over the sink.
Oh, Phil. Yeah, well, you'd have to be sink based. Yeah, and we're gonna have, so that's our 1 week without Amy Adams before Trouble with the Curve.
You're gonna get withdrawals.
Well, only when I'm bent over the sink.
Want me, make you want me, and I'ma give you some attention.